Hello, everybody. It's another episode of the Throwback. It's me, your host, Ryan the Potman, and this is
Jimmy the Radio Man.
And we got another special guest on the program today. 7-time medalist and gymnast Shannon Miller will be on the show. Hey, wait a minute. Jimmy, what's up with the bouquet of roses and suit? What's going on?
Let me tell you something to Dad. I brought these files for Shannon. Where's she at, Dad? Let's get the show on the road.
Jimmy, this interview is pre-recorded. Shannon isn't actually here.
What are you talking about, Dad? She's actually here?
No, Jimmy, but those are some nice flowers. Where'd you get these?
Oh, I stole those from my neighbor's yard, Daddy.
Wait, what? Jimmy, why'd you do that? Which neighbor?
The one that lives right around the corner with the blue fence.
You mean that sweet old lady that owns the parakeet?
That's the one, Daddy. I just wanted to do something nice for the greatest gymnast of all time.
You probably should put those back before she wakes up.
Yeah, you're right, Daddy. It was only a 7-day return on this year's suit. And this price tag is giving my arm a rash, so I got to return it first.
Anyways, folks, if you like what you hear today, be sure to check us out on Blog Talk Radio at www.blogtalkradio.com/throwback or on Twitter at Throw Podcast for other great interviews. Now here's our exclusive interview with 7-time Olympic medalist Shannon Miller.
You are listening to The Throwback Podcast, your stop for everything 90s. This is a Throwback exclusive.
Joining me at this time is one of the most decorated and celebrated gymnasts of all time. I am pleased to welcome 1996 Olympic gold medal winner Shannon Miller to the program. Shannon, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
I just wanted to quickly ask you first, what was your childhood like growing up in terms of like sports?
Well, I had what I think is just a great childhood. I loved growing up in the sport of gymnastics. I started when I was 5, and I really just fell in love with the sport. I started in gymnastics to follow my older sister, who that's all I wanted to be in life, was I wanted to be like my older sister.
Yeah.
And followed her into the sport. And then when she went on to swimming, I didn't. I had found my love. I mean, I loved being able to challenge myself and go upside down and jump on the trampoline and jump in the big foam pit and all of those fun things. And it kind of just grew from there. But I think when most people think of athletes or professional athletes, they feel like maybe there's things we missed out on. And I feel like I really didn't miss out on anything. I grew up in Oklahoma. My family, we really didn't know anything about the Olympics. I just kind of kept following this passion for gymnastics, but I also went to public school, and my parents were very adamant that education comes first, and it's great that you have this dream, and we'll support you in that, in gymnastics, but how did you do on the math test? So there were the normal chores and
right.
The normal, you know, weekend fun and those types of things, so I kind of got the best of both worlds.
Oh, okay. So what were some of your other favorite sports growing up? Like, were you attracted to any other sports besides gymnastics growing up?
Well, I was in dance before gymnastics. And, of course, I mean, I was only 4 years old. But I loved dance. And I continued with dance even when I was doing gymnastics. It was a big component, I think, of gymnastics because of the full exercise. And I think it helped me excel in the sport. So I loved dance as well. Of course, starting gymnastics at 5, I really didn't have the opportunity to try a lot of other sports.
Right.
But I did after I retired, and there's a lot of things I enjoy, but gymnastics was the one that I just had this amazing passion for.
Oh, okay, that's awesome. I think we kind of touched this on already, but what attracted you to gymnastics at such a young age? Was it because of your sister?
A lot of it was because of my sister. A lot of it was also because my parents were kind of getting concerned about the flips and everything that we were trying to do at home.
Right.
They had purchased a trampoline at a garage sale.
Right.
One year for our Christmas present. And we would start doing, this was before trampolines had nets and pads and all that good stuff they have now.
Right.
And so my sister and I would try to do flips and turns on it, and I think we just terrified our parents. I think between that and trying to, you know, basically tear up the furniture turning flips, they decided
right.
they needed to move us into a safer environment to do those things.
Yeah. So did you have another career you were considering, or did you always, like, you kind of knew gymnastics was your, like, calling once you started getting an interest in it?
Oh, well, you know, I think when I started gymnastics, I was certainly too young to think about a career. And as I moved through gymnastics, it was always something I wanted to do, especially as I grew up, 12, 13, 14 years old, I really began to focus on the Olympics because that was kind of the next step in that career. But it was never the only thing I was interested in.
Right.
I loved school. I knew that I would continue on with my education afterwards. And there was some thought here and there about what I might do, but nothing solid.
Right.
I didn't know I wanted to be, a certain thing when I grew up. I just knew that I wouldn't always be a gymnast. The lifespan of a gymnast is fairly short with regard to, kind of when you can compete and how long you can compete. So
right.
I knew I would go on to something else. I just
yeah.
didn't know what that might be.
Okay. When did you win your first medal, and how was the feeling like when you first won it?
Oh, goodness. So when I was growing up, I did not start out at a gym that had a competitive team.
Right.
We were just recreational. So we would go do parades and things like that, but we didn't compete. And so it wasn't until I was 9 years old that I started with Steve Nuno at Dynamo Gymnastics in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And so I was part of that competitive team. But my first trophy was actually not won at a competition. My first trophy was actually... says best balance beam.
Oh, yeah.
was actually won in a handstand contest between me and my coach, Steve.
Oh, wow.
And I loved this trophy, and it was just one that was, it was just at the gym for whatever reason. And I just fell in love with this trophy, and he said, okay, you beat me in a handstand contest, you can have the trophy. and I did.
Wow.
And I still have that trophy, and it's one of my the things I would look at every night, best balance beam, and eventually I got to be there.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Wow, so for those unfamiliar with the process, walk us through your journey of, making your first Olympic team in 1992.
Well, the process, kind of begins with, state competition, then you qualify for regionals,
right.
qualify for nationals, get on the national team. And I think I got on the national team when I was 10 or 11 and started competing internationally for Team USA.
Right.
And then when I was 14, the year before the Olympics, I competed at the World Championships. And that was my first World Championship.
Oh,
it was
wow.
in Indianapolis. And it was an amazing experience. Again, you got to wear the red, white, and blue and compete for your country. And that, to me, was really... the big step. Okay, if I made the world team, then I could potentially make it onto the Olympic team in a year.
Right.
And again, I was only 14 years old, but I knew that's something that I wanted to do. And I was training really hard. And about 10 weeks prior to the Olympic trials in 92, I was doing a dismount at workout off of the uneven bars
right.
One night. And I ended up breaking and dislocating my left elbow.
Oh, yeah. Ouch. That must have hurt.
And so that was, it hurt more ways than one. It was certainly physically, but I think, emotionally and psychologically, I think it was devastating to have
yeah.
it happen so close to Olympic trials. And I think a lot of people probably counted me out. But I remember getting a call. I got a call, actually, from Bart Connor, who, fellow Oklahoman. And he told me about an injury he had suffered right before the 1984 Olympics. Now he overcame that, and he felt like that I could do that too. And he
right.
believed in me. And I remember thinking, wow, Bart Connor called me. and then after that kind of wore off, I realized he was right. If I wanted to do this, then I just needed to give it all I had. And my coach Steve and my coach Peggy, they were incredible. And they just had this belief that if I worked hard enough, I could come back and I could make the team. And so we didn't, I missed one day, which was the day after surgery. And then I was back in the gym and stretching and conditioning. I couldn't do a lot with my arm, but stretching and conditioning and did end up winning the Olympic trials and making the Olympic team. And so for me, it was an incredible, incredible journey and great life lesson as well. You know, every time I hit a challenge or have a mistake or a failure, it's one of those points in my life I can look back to and know that, okay, I can get back up and I can keep going. I just need to keep trying, keep giving it 100% every time. And then, of course, in 1992, to walk home with with any kind of medal was just incredible.
Yeah, you actually had a very successful performance in your first Olympics. You had, five medals, like the most I think any American had in Barcelona that year, if I'm not mistaken.
I did. Someone had to tell me that.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And for me, you know, the medals are amazing and they're beautiful and it's a great symbol of that achievement. But I would tell you, the thing that I loved the most about that Olympics was hitting 16 routines for 16. Yeah. That had never been done before. And for me, it was always about trying to get as close to perfection in my routines as I could. So to be able to stay on all the events and to compete so well over such a long period of time, a two-week period, that's what really stands out for me the most.
Oh, wow. So what kind of mental preparation do you have to go through for competing at such a high level? Like, the Olympics are so competitive. Like, what, like, mental preparation do you, like, go through before, like, an event?
Well, I think the mental preparation starts years in advance. And I always say, you know, Olympic medals are not won on the day of competition. They're won with the hard work that happens long before you step on the floor on that day. And it's the same with mental preparation. You start when you're young, competing at a zillion competitions. And, you know, my parents will tell you, every weekend at another competition, and you fall. And then you have to get back up. And you have to do it within the allotted 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
So you learn to get back up. You learn to handle the pressure and the audience. You block it out, block out any noise when you have to, and let it in when you need to.
Yeah.
There's that mental aspect that is so critical. You can be so talented in this sport, but if you can't handle the mental portion, then it won't come together.
Yeah.
On the actual day of competition, for me, it's really about keeping things the same. So I want to work out like I'm going to compete and compete like I work out. And so a lot of times that is about breathing. It's about visualization of your routines, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. So what was your training regimen like when you prepare for the Olympics? Like, you obviously have to train, like, years in advance for something like that. Like, so, like...
As far as hours, we trained 6 to 7 hours a day, 6 days a week, pretty much year-round.
Oh, year-round. Okay.
That was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
At the 1996 Olympics, you and Team USA, known as the Magnificent Seven, won the gold medal. How did it finally feel to win the gold medal?
It was just incredible. I mean, people talk about, you know, fulfilling a lifelong dream, and that's really what it was. It was a dream come true for all of us. And so to stand up there with the rest of my teammates, and three of us had been in the 92 Olympics. And the 92 Olympics... it doesn't stand out for people as much as the 96 Olympics, but the 92 Games in Barcelona, that was the first time we made it on the podium as a women's team in a non-boycotted game. So for us, that bronze medal in 92 was a huge step toward taking the gold in 96. So to have three of us coming back from that team competing in 96 was incredible. And just to have that there in Atlanta on home soil with the support of the audience there, I mean, it was such a tremendous, tremendous experience.
Yeah, that must have been so surreal.
Do you still keep in touch with the 1996 team, like Dominique Dogg, Carrie Shrug, and the others? You guys still keep in contact?
We do. You know, I think some of us are closer than others, just I think by virtue of kind of what we are doing now, and maybe even age. Most of us just hit 40, so we have that in common. But we try to stay in touch as much as possible, and we actually get the opportunity to see each other at different events and different appearances and whatnot. And I actually stay in touch with my 1992 teammates quite a bit as well.
Oh, wow.
Kim Zemeskal, Betty Aquino. So it's really been fun, and it's funny to hear our discussions now, because we talk about how it could possibly be 2 decades since we competed, and we talk about our children.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of the everyday stuff that's going on now.
Yeah. So you retired from gymnastics at the age of 19. How hard was it to walk away from something you love so much?
It was hard. I think for any athlete, and I think certainly professional or Olympic athlete, especially one that retires so young. Yeah. I mean, I was 19. And so for me, it was going from this incredible support system, this incredible structure where I had this gymnastics family as well as my actual family
right.
with me and supporting me to really in one day kind of being finished with that. I then, you know, moved away to college, and so it was kind of like losing that structure and that support system almost overnight. And so that was very difficult, and I think trying to figure out what do I do with the rest of my life at that point, like any 20-year-old goes through, but now having it kind of compounded by the loss of kind of that structure. And for me, I was very, very shy growing up. So I did not immediately kind of transfer into other things. So I had to kind of take a little bit of stock. It took me a few years to kind of get my feet under me and kind of understand how to bounce back and how to move forward in other endeavors. But it's not an easy thing, and a lot of athletes will tell you it's something that we need to do a better job of helping athletes through that transition.
Yeah, transitioning from like being an athlete to like post like after retiring.
You're still kind of active in gymnastics a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. I believe you do some guest commentary and interview work for NBC during the Olympics.
I do stay involved quite actively in the sport and in a variety of ways. I love still connecting with the athletes and fans, and I love, as you said, being a commentator and analyst, especially for the Olympic Games. That has been for me a tremendous opportunity to stay involved with the sport that I love, and do so in a way that I don't have to wear a leotard. and I don't have to train 6 hours a day, but it's just really fun, and I love getting to see and be a part of watching the next generation come through. You know, I've now watched many of these athletes from the time they started gymnastics, basically, to when they fulfill their Olympic dream.
Right. Yeah. So, what inspired you to write a book?
I actually wrote a book when I was 19, and that was more of kind of a young adult book after the Olympics. And I love writing. It's part of kind of what I end up doing my first year of my work quite a bit. But after I went through, I was actually diagnosed with a rare form of ovarian cancer in 2011.
Right.
And through that journey, I leaned a lot on lessons learned through sport, those great life lessons I learned in gymnastics, things like goal setting and teamwork, perseverance,
right.
having a positive attitude, visualization, all of these great things that we learn through sport. And I wrote them in kind of a short story as kind of just something that was a bit cathartic for me after finishing chemotherapy finding out I was cancer free. And for me, just the writing was very helpful for me. And then I kept getting these questions. Well, when are you going to come out with the full book? When are you going to write the full book? And so finally I did. I actually went through and it turned out to be more of a memoir than I meant it to be. Cause I always feel like I'm too young to write a memoir, but it's called It's Not About Perfect. And for me, that really encapsulates my life, because so much of it used to be about perfection, perfect toe point, perfect landing, perfect pen. And what you find in life and in our health and in any other challenge that we're facing is it's not about perfect. And then I realized it really wasn't about perfect in gymnastics either. It was about going out and giving it my best every single day. And so I kind of use this book as a way to go through my gymnastics career and my cancer journey, but also share some of those great life lessons that I learned that hopefully are applicable to other people and their lives.
All right. So how did your cancer diagnosis change your perspective on life?
I think in some ways it helped me slow down.
Right.
I'm certainly more passionate than ever about health and wellness. The focus of my company is on health and wellness. But I also think it's allowed me to kind of stop and smell the roses in some ways. I'm more determined, I'm more driven than ever, but at the same time, I also appreciate those small moments more than ever. I know in gymnastics, I used to get done with one competition and I was immediately back in the gym preparing for the next one and learning the next skill. I got home from the 92 Olympics. I was back in the gym 3 days later, raring to go. And I didn't stop and really appreciate that success. It was the same with school. I didn't walk at my college graduation because I was on to law school. I didn't walk at my law school graduation because I was on to starting my company. And so now I think cancer has taught me that I just need to stop and appreciate every single day. And that doesn't mean I can't be driven, but it just means I can stop and appreciate those moments a bit more before going on to the next thing.
Yeah, it helps you slow down probably a little bit to take in stuff a little bit more. But tell us a little bit more about your company and your work with Women's Health.
So I started my Women's Health company. It's called Shannon Miller Lifestyle, and it's dedicated to helping women make their health a priority. And I started this, I actually launched it in 2010, but my work in Women's Health started years before that.
Right.
And for me, I think it began as a focus on nutrition and fitness, managing our sleep and rest, things like that that really spoke to me in my early and late 20s. And it evolved into so much more because what we realized is it's not just about those things. We really want to focus on diet, nutrition, rest, recuperation, those things, everything in moderation. We don't want to set the bar so high that we throw up our hands and say, you know what, I can't eat perfectly, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Right.
You have to have it be manageable for people that work really hard every single day. And we're all juggling 100 different things every single day, so it has to be manageable. But I think then we saw the importance of including a focus on heart disease, a focus on diabetes, a focus on cancer awareness. And then with my mother being diagnosed, she was diagnosed actually in 2008, and my diagnosis in 2011, it just became, we became much more involved in the cancer awareness process, especially for women's cancer.
Right.
So it's a fun company. We get to do a lot of different things, whether it's programs, events, awareness, education. We have a great website you can go to. But I also get the opportunity to travel the country and speak to people, and that's probably one of my absolute favorite things to do.
All right. What's the website to your company if people want to learn more about it?
Oh, sure. It's very easy. It's shannonmiller.com.
Okay, awesome. Okay, in closing, do you have any final comments or words for your fans who's followed you over the years?
Oh, goodness. If I could say anything to my fans, I would just say thank you. I really do have the best fans. I mean, they've been with me since the get-go, and they stayed with me through the ups and the downs of my career, and I'm so appreciative of that, and I love now getting to meet fans all over the country and the world that that have really grown up with me and me with them. And now we all, a lot of us have kids and we're at same phases in life. And so we're kind of going through the same ups and downs. And I just think it's fun. I think we get to kind of grow up together. And so it's fun. And I love having the opportunity to be so interactive with fans via social media.
Right.
We didn't have that in 96. A lot of people forget. We basically didn't have cell phones or internet in 96.
Yeah, it was just starting to come up around that time, I think, slowly.
It was. So now having that opportunity to reach out to fans and vice versa via social media has been a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Olympic medalist and gymnast legend, Shannon Miller. Thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Special thanks goes out to Shannon Miller for taking time to come on the Throwback.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that interview right there, Dad. Shannon is 5 stars out of the way.
She definitely is. Wait, Jimmy, what are you eating? I thought you were going to return the flowers and soup.
I'm eating here a can of these SpaghettiOs, Daddy. I was getting a little hungry.
You're making such a mess. At least use a napkin.
Oh, I don't believe in napkins, Daddy. The napkins are the devil.
The napkins are the devil? Where are you even getting this stuff from?
Oh, I saw it on an episode of Animaniacs once.
Whatever you say, Jimmy.
And look what you made me do, Daddy. I done spilled SpaghettiOs all over this here soup now. I gotta come up with $87.
Anyways, folks, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. In the month of January, author of the ever-popular book Console Wars, Blake J. Perry, will be stopping by on the Throwback to talk about the era of 90s video games.
I'm looking forward to that, Daddy.
I think you should be looking for some shout for that stain, pal. Until next time.
Anyone got $87 at the ball?
Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at Throw Podcast or on the web at www.blogtalkradio.com/throwback.